All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Fundamentally Sound Podcast. Going to sound a little different this episode. If you listened to the last one on Sunday night or Monday, you heard kind of the new plan for the show going forward, where Brust and I will be doing shows every Sunday together. And then with his new work schedule, since he is now a radio talent at ESPN Madison, he's going to be hit or miss during the week. But with it being in season, we're going to be doing two shows a week. So some weeks you'll just have me. Some weeks you'll have a guest. Tonight we have a guest. It's my guy, Troy Macker, who is the senior digital producer for NBC Sports Washington. But you've probably seen his work around before. Troy, what's going on, man? Did I really freeze right off the beginning?
Great college town. Psyched to be here and psyched that Hoops is back.
Yeah, man. It was like, especially with the whole FBI stuff and who's playing, who's not playing. Like, that was a conversation for way too long. And now it's finally just, all right, here are the games. You still don't know, like, it's still kind of hit or miss about who's playing. But
yeah,
at least we get to see guys out there, most notably last night. That Duke-Michigan State game was a lot of fun.
It was awesome. It was up and down, back and forth. You know, early on in the season, for a lot of these teams with top guys, top-end guys, when you're playing a 1-2, a 1-4, whatever it was, you got to just roll the ball out and let them play, because you're still coaching on schemes and how to play as a team, because you know, college is team game, systems and everything. So to see those dudes just play ball was fun. Like, Duke has some bad guys on that team. Like,
I'm all here for Grayson Allen just turning into, like, Grayson motherfucking Allen.
We all are.
I hate him. Like, I mean, like, I hate him and I love him at the same time.
It's awesome. And the thing is after the game and seeing all these articles about, you know, he's finally the player we want him to be, I was like, no, he was phenomenal as a freshman. He balled out in the Final Four. He's right. One of the reasons they won that championship game.
He just looked like what he did as a sophomore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so to have a villain on Duke is great, and then you have all these pros. Like, people forget that Grayson Allen's a pro. He's been a pro since he was a freshman. Like, yeah, this guy's going to be in the NBA.
Yeah, like, it came out. I forget who had it today. I forget who it was. I'm not going to try to remember. But they were like, yeah, scouts will have him as, like, a first-round pick. And it's like, yeah, that was pretty much the case for 2 years.
Yeah, he's a freak athlete. Like, I don't know if he won the McDonald's All-American Game Slam Dunk Contest, but he came into college as, like, one of the best dunkers, one of the best pure athletes.
I'm pretty sure won it, because that was the year he came out with – he wore the Jay Williams jersey for that dunk.
Yeah. Yeah, and people forget because, you know, he's the lead white guy at Duke, and he tripped guys, so they just think he's a squirrely guy like Paulus or Redick. And I'm like, no, this cat can fly.
Yeah.
And he's got Duvall and Trent and Carter and Bagley. In 25 games, Duke is going to be so good if they get a bench and if they stay healthy.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really concerned about their bench, especially in the backcourt, because Grayson's able to be so good right now because of Duvall. Like,
yeah,
the last two years, I mean, Grayson balled out his sophomore year, but he was playing on the ball. Like, he had to deal with, like Derek Thornton wasn't really the answer. You know, Frank Jackson wasn't the answer. So he finally just has a point guard to play with. And, like, we're seeing it. Like, we're seeing, like, when he's able just to, like, run on the wing, run, like, you know, a couple bounces, and then either pull up or attack, he's going to score. You know, he's going to have a couple 30-point games this year.
Mm-hmm.
It should not shock anybody.
Yeah, I think the concern, like you said, in the backcourt, like, Luke Kennard was a phenomenal safety blanket. Like, he was a star, but he never made a lot of mistakes. He was always surefire. You needed a bucket, that's your guy. When no one else is producing, that's your guy. Big three-pointer, drive to the lane, defensive stop. Not having him is going to be big, because he'd be a junior this year. Luke Kennard, the junior, would elevate this to levels that I don't know any team in the country can compete with. So that's a question. And then, you know, like, the front court is good. You know, I think we were hoping to expect better things from Marcus Bolden, who is a, you know, McDonald's All-American parade guy, whatever. And he's going to end up being a role player, hopefully, if by the end of 4 years he's an Emile Jefferson type. You got something out of him, but that's looking like more bust than anything else.
Yeah, the question is, can he be more Emile Jefferson or more Chase Jeter? Like,
you'd like the former. I think you like the former.
Right, right. But, like, there was the rumors that he was going to transfer after this season. I know he has strep, so he looks a little sluggish right now. That's part of the reason why he didn't play last night, apparently, with Wendell Carter in foul trouble and Bagley. You know, Bagley only played 10 minutes with that scratched eye. But if Bolden can just give him, like, man, if he can just give him 15 minutes a game right now this season,
yeah,
they're fine.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think it was the year Duke won the national championship. They played, like, a six-man rotation.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Krzyzewski is fine playing five dudes if he has to. But,
yeah,
like,
they're just going
to want to have an elite team with no cracks. Yeah.
Going back to Kennard. Would Kennard be the favorite for National Player of the Year this year if he stayed? Or would it be Miles Bridges?
I don't think there was anything stumping Miles Bridges. Like, he's a total package. When you look at the rest of the landscape this year, I think it's Miles Bridges. Kennard's a first-team All-American. Like, but that's the thing. People forgot about Grayson Allen. This guy could. I would not be surprised if he's first-team All-American at the end of the year, even with dudes around him.
Yeah, because, I mean, something's going to have to give. Like, they're all not going to average 20 a game. Like, everyone, you know, Gary Trent will average, like, 8 a game. Duval will average, you know, 12 a game or something like that. You know, Wendell Carter will average 12 a game. And then Bagley and Allen will be, you know, 18 to 24 type range. But, I mean, that's really, really goddamn good. But that's, I think, what people kind of lose when they see teams like this is, like, well, who's going to, you know, how can Grayson Allen, you know, be first-team All-American when they have all these other guys? And it's like, well, you kind of fit the roles. Like, Gary Trent's going to be the shooter. Duvall is going to be, you know, the pass-first, and get his own buckets. You know, Bagley's going to do a little bit of everything. I think you started to see that last night. Like, this is still Grayson Allen's team with the help of Trayvon Duvall.
Absolutely. Like, who's going to take the big shot? Who's going to have the ball in his hand with under 10 seconds left? It's going to be Grayson Allen. And here's the thing. You don't. And maybe Duvall, yes, Bagley, maybe. You don't really want it in anyone else's hands. Like, if Grayson Allen is an option, how many dudes in the country would you rather have it in his hands than him?
That's a great question. I'm going to try to think of a list off the top of my head. That's a great question. I would go, all right, Trayvon Blewett or Grayson Allen?
Ooh.
That's
a really good question.
Yeah.
I think I'd still go Allen. Dude, he made big shots in the national championship game as a freshman.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just thinking more of the mismatch, like, if Blewett at the four getting a shot off versus Allen on the wing.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. If we're ranking top three dudes who should have the ball in their hands the last shot, like, Blewett is probably number two. I think there's someone I'm probably forgetting.
What about, like, Alonzo Trier?
Could be. He hit, like, one or two really clutch shots last.
I'm trying to think, like, because, like, I agree Miles Bridges is the best player in the country, but I don't think he's in this slot of – I mean, he's somewhere in the top 10 guys I want to take the last shot, but I don't think he's up to the top of the list.
No.
Because I don't trust his outside shooting. I know he shot well last year. I just think he kind of forces himself into, like, 18, 19-footers when he doesn't have to.
Yeah, and you would have to set up a last play for him as opposed to, like, all right, you know, other team shot now, you just have to dribble out and you got 15 seconds. Like, you know, Austin Rivers versus North Carolina 5 years ago, where it was just like, dribble out and do you. And I don't think Miles Bridges could do that. I mean, he could hit any shot he wanted, but he's not – in that category, he's not alpha. He's the alpha in terms of, you know, being the most well-rounded college basketball player.
I'm trying to think, like, Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, it's got or even who's his teammate, the big ragu.
Yeah, Dante DiVincenzo. Yeah, I mean,
I feel like that's a guy who's just got ice water. Like, here's what Devontae Graham, Kansas.
Yeah, Graham would be a good one. Another name that kind of popped up would be Kyle Guy from Virginia.
Oh yeah,
because, like, he has the balls to shoot from anywhere.
Yeah, and he'll get the ball with 23 left on the shot clock and dribble it out.
Right. Although, you know what? We might be missing one of the top three answers. And it's Joel Berry.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of the list when you're talking, like, the top guys or top conferences of guys.
If I'm just racking my brain, though, of, like, last shots that included North Carolina, I feel like most of them come inside. So they're more likely to want to get their last shot, even if it's a broken possession, like a 10-footer.
Right, but they just don't have that guy. I mean,
yeah.
You know what? They still have Luke May, so it's probably Luke fucking May.
Yeah. There's one dude who wants the last shot, probably more than anyone in the country. It's Marcus Foster from Creighton.
Yeah. He will take a shot. He'll take a shot from anywhere.
Even like Steve McCaluk from Kansas.
Yeah, but he is again, no conscious.
Yeah, but he also, you have to get him coming off a screen, and like he's not just going to have the ball with 7 seconds to go to dribble it out. Like, right. It's going to have to be a dude with the ball in their hands who's an alpha, who is like, screw everybody else, I'm taking the shot. And that Grayson Allen has just enough of that, and he's also a great shooter and can get to the lane and create his own shot.
My favorite thing about Grayson Allen last night was after he hit that three, after the timeout off the side where it was that deep three, he kind of chucked it up. And he took a three, I think it was to go up seven. And he kind of got, it looked like he almost got fouled, and they didn't call it, he drilled it. He came down and he looked like he wanted to do the same Cassell big ball celebration, and he just kind of froze for a half a second and just had like that smirk. And I was like, come on, Grayson, give it to us. And you could just tell like there was definitely a conversation between him and Krzyzewski.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see such a toned down version because the regular version got himself in a lot of trouble. Right. But like when he is kind of, you know, being the pissant that we want the star player for Duke to be, like, give us something, man. It doesn't have to be kicking guys in the nuts or tripping them, but like, give us some pouting, give us like a little bit of Marshall Henderson against Auburn, just like a little bit,
or like, even like the JJ Redick just like running with his hands up in the air.
Yeah,
like just give us that, because people will go nuts because it's Grayson.
Like, you got it, man. Flaunt it. Maybe not all of it, but some of it.
But if
like that's one of the things that
if
great.
He did the Sam Cassell big ball dance after hitting that shot, like it would have been my favorite thing in the world. It would have been better than anything Marshall Henderson would have done.
Yes, and you also think about the stage. I mean, one of the reasons I love like November is because you get these cool non-conference matchups, and you get like Feast Week, and just is, you know, 130 games on Friday night, whatever it was. But it's also football season, and it's also pro basketball season, so all the talking heads are still in other sports. So, like, the nuts, like us, kind of have it to ourselves.
Right.
So we – and, like, that's the one problem with, like, I don't like the Champions Classic, because it's just they're shoehorning and Herb Street in there and Stephen A. Smith. And it's like, let this just be hoops. But at the same time, yeah, if Allen goes Sam Cassell and does the big balls dance, like, hello, Wednesday news cycle.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Everything. And we want, and I want that as a college hoops stan. Like, I want that more than anything.
Right. Like, I remember the conversation last year with him tripping, because that happened in like right before Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and it was, you know, it was interrupting bowl season. It was interrupting, you know, end of NFL regular season. And I was like, you know what? It sucks that this is what people are talking about, but I'll take it because people are talking about college basketball. Like, everyone's gonna watch that next game that Duke plays in.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'll take that. The Champions Classic, though, Goodman had it today that it's moving. It looks like it's going to move to the opening night next year, which will be on a Tuesday. It's on a Tuesday now, but obviously earlier in game one. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think I kind of love it.
So I do. My biggest issue with Friday, which was our basic opening, was that there was like one good game. And it was Texas A&M and West Virginia, and it was a good game, but, like, Texas A&M won by 23. There's no big opening salvo. Like, I think it's
– last year. Like, last year we had the two games out in Hawaii where it was
– Yeah.
Indiana, Kansas, and Michigan State, Arizona.
Yeah.
We just didn't have it this year.
There needs to be more good games. And, heck, even if you can't get enough to, you know, supersede, like, a Saturday because of football, obviously, and pro sports, but, like – Yeah, go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and have, like, you know, do your Champions Classic on Tuesday. Wednesday, you should have two different – you should have, like, Indiana play Notre Dame and then have Creighton play Northern – like, do, like, a state-in-state, you know, thing, Crossroads Classic, and then do another kind of rival – big-time rivalry non-conference game. So every night is – you have a different kind of marquee game, and then the schedule will flesh itself out. But if you can't do one full day, do 3 days in a row and lead it with the Champions Classic, because it's – I mean,
Everyone watches the Champions.
Here's the thing: the two games last night is gonna probably be more star studded than the Final Four. Like,
oh yeah, because the Final Four is gonna be weird this year. Like I've been saying
it always.
Right, but it's like it's one of those like I you know, when's the last time that four of the top, let's say, 10 teams heading into the season made the Final Four?
Yeah, like I know we've had four number ones like 4 or 5 years ago, but like that could have been a team that, you know, we had in 15 to start the year and then just became
right,
the number one.
Right.
It's very, very rare that you get like three of those teams.
Right. The one time I remember it happening was in 15 with Kentucky, Duke, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, it took everything. Like Kentucky had to avoid, like Jerry and Grant should have made that last shot.
Yeah.
Wisconsin had to come back for, you know, play the tight game against Oregon or Arizona. And, it's just one of those. It's not going to happen. Like, this year, like, it's going to be, like, a 6 seed in the Final Four.
Yeah, there's always one. And, right. And even if it's a 2 seed, like, Oklahoma or something. So, to have literally, like, the Final Four we all predict, kind of, just two games to open it, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I think.
Because, you know.
The other thing I was going to say is, you know, moving the start of the season from Friday to Tuesday gives the 3 days, or at least 1 day of talking about basketball.
Yeah, one thing I didn't like is that, so it's always the year of the freshman, right? Maybe some years more than others, but freshmen are always the most highly touted. So you look at the guys like Michael Porter, Marvin Bagley, Billy Preston, who I really like, DeAndre Ayton, Mo Bamba. Preston hasn't played.
Yep.
Bagley got injured 10 minutes into national TV. Porter was injured 2 minutes into the game. So it's just like, a lot of these are nothing games, so if they're not going to be competitive games between top 25s or good mid-majors, like, I'm watching just four players, and three of the dudes who I want to watch, like, haven't played at all. So there's games for me to watch, because I'll watch whatever. I watch Navy versus Pitt, like, right. I don't care. But I want to watch Michael Porter, so when people start watching him, I know more about him. And to not have any of those guys play in the first two games is kind of sucks. So, like, I don't know what the answer is other than don't get injured, but the opening – this has been the most disappointing opening of the season I've seen in a while from college hoops, because they're like kind of out of gimmick ideas.
Yeah, I think it falls back to that opening night where you just didn't have that game to kind of hold on to. And even like, you know, like that West Virginia game was at 6 o'clock, so it's like even after that ended, it's like, okay, well, what do we have to get to the nightcap? Like there was just nothing in that middle range where – you know, people are out to dinner and games are on, or out at the bar and games are on. Like, the next game that people wanted to watch was at 11:30, and it was UCLA Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I legit watched Giannis Antetokounmpo versus the Spurs. And, like, I love hoops, but I was like, there's literally nothing for me to latch on to. Not even like a Pitt Navy. Like, that game had ended. Like, it was, you know, Chippewa State versus Georgia Southern. Like, it was NAIA school. So, like,
right.
Get one – if you're going to do one day, get one stacked day. Just crush it from 6 to – give us a BYU-Gonzaga or like Stanford-Gonzaga at like midnight. I'm in. You put that game on at 1:30 in the morning and I'll watch it until whenever.
Right. Like I'm – you know what? I was fine with the game – like the night ending with Georgia Tech-UCLA. Those are two fine teams. But like you need something at 3 o'clock. Like, you had Cincinnati-Savannah State at noon. Whatever. That's fine. But put something at, like, 2. Give me another, Wichita State versus, I don't know, Texas or something like that.
Yeah. And so I get the idea, like, they did the Marathon Madness, and it kind of ran its course. But, like, take parts of that.
Right. You don't have to do 24 hours.
Exactly. But yeah. Give me noon to 2 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. Like, or even, like, just get me to midnight. Just get me to midnight
Exactly. Like, yeah, because I think there's nothing better than afternoon sports that are on TV because it's the best thing in the world, I think.
So here's a little segue because I was going to bring this up later. I had in my blog today, I was just doing like kind of a what's going on in college basketball. And one of the things I said is, you know, I think officiating actually has been pretty good this year, but there's two changes I really want to see be made. The two are go into quarters and implementing a defensive 3 seconds. The other thing that I've been preaching forever is I want one conference to adapt MAC football theory, like brain theory of Each team plays a home and away game during the weekday for the, like, the regular conference season. So there's 28 daytime games during the regular season.
That is a rule I would sign my name in blood to. That's, yes, yeah. Like, the MAC is on Tuesday nights. They're on Wednesday nights for football. Change that for basketball and make it, the Mountain West, well, maybe bad example because it's out west, but, like, Conference USA, you guys got everyone has to play a 2 p.m. game every other week. Right. I am so in.
It's 28 games. You can still play off like that. They're students first because they're only missing 2 days throughout the entire regular season, where I think you can really make it. You're not going to lose a lot of money because you only have one home game at that 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock time slot. You're still gonna, let's be honest, you're still gonna fill it. Like, the arenas will still be filled. I'm not worried about that. Students will still go. Teachers will give off classes. I'm all for it. Like, the Horizon League should do this. Like Tuesday, Wednesday at 2 o'clock, there's one game on every week.
Yeah, and it makes, like, it's feasible because if you take a small conference like the Horizon, where they're all within two or three states, okay, you leave for travel the night before,
right,
at like 6 p.m. You travel from Kenosha to Oakland or wherever it is, and then you sleep, you wake up, you have shoot around at 10, the game's at 2 or 3, you get back on the bus, you're
home at 9.
You can't do it with the Big 12 or the SEC or something because too big.
Like the MAC, the MAC would be perfect because every school's in Ohio.
Yeah, seriously. You have one league, you have one division that's in Ohio, and the other one is the directional Michigan schools.
Right.
Like, that's fine, and it raises the profile of that. Like, everyone knows MACtion. And for the start of the season, like, what is the best part of college basketball? The first 2 days of March Madness, when games are on at noon. So why not try to replicate that for one day when you can control it on a Tuesday? Everyone at work is gonna do that.
Right.
And everybody.
Just do one on Tuesday, do one on Wednesday. So there's two regular season games per week on at like 2 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of quarters just because, and I don't really have an explanation other than like, I like halves. I've always done halves for college basketball. I don't know.
It's not necessarily that. I just want the fouls to reset. I'm sick of watching free throw contests.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I would not fight it, but I would never state that we should go to that. But putting afternoon games in, like, I would fight to the death for that.
Yeah, and like, I'm not saying, because I remember, like, I got in, like, last year, I think I put out something like that, and a couple SIDs were like, well, what about this? What about this? You know, like, there's students, there's classes, and it's like, listen, I'm not talking about, the same team playing, missing two days of classes every week. It's two for, the course of, 2.5 months, whatever.
And yeah, the MAC had, like, 14 teams.
Right, right. So, like, you can easily get there's 30 games. That's enough to hold people over. Like, if they know, they know there's one game on that they can, or two games on a week that they can bet the over on at 2 o'clock, people will do that. Like, people will watch. People will, stream it at work. People will still attend the games. To me, it's a no-brainer. And I just need one conference to think it like that.
A Sun, MAC,
right.
Horizon,
Sun
Patriot,
Belt.
Sun Belt. Hey, like, I'm all in for this brand push. Like, I would adopt a team from that conference as my favorite team of all time, replacing Georgetown if they did that. Like, I have, when I run for president, that's going to be the foundation of my platform. Is like making all sports mandatory, all every game, but every sport have mandatory afternoon weekday sporting events.
Yes.
Baseball, so much fun to go to a baseball game in the afternoon.
Yep. There should be an afternoon baseball game every day. There should be
every single day.
Because
every single day.
They're professionals, you can easily do it. College basketball, easy thing to do. Like NBA, when they play on MLK Day, that's super fun.
Yeah. Yeah, think about all the big now, like, event branding things, like Christmas Day, first game's at 12. They play 12, 2, 4, 6, 8. MLK Day, they got a couple years ago, college basketball had a quadruple header on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Like, maybe they're thinking we don't want to saturate the marketplace, but, like, it's the MAC. They'll take it. We'll love it. It'll be great.
Everyone watch. Like, tell me, like, somebody would not fall in love with, Toledo, watching them play you know, twice during the regular season, during the work, you know, let's say they play the first, you know, daytime game of the season, of the conference, and it's like, you know, it's an entertaining game. Toledo gets up and down. You know, how many people are gonna be like, you know what? I'm in on this Toledo team. I'm gonna keep an eye on them.
Yeah, you're like, pick a conference like the Big South, where you have VMI who will score 120 points a game. Like, you pick a conference that has like a different systems, and systems in college basketball are prevalent everywhere. Where like teams will be like, you know what? We're just gonna get up and down. Find a high output conference that might not be great basketball, but you know what? For 2 hours on a Tuesday, where you're not trying to go into a meeting, you're gonna watch VMI versus, you know, Charleston Southern, because it's going to be 101-88.
Yeah, because it's at least just something to watch.
It's something. It's not the third airing of First Take, or it's not right. The third show to talk about the same things that the previous two shows have talked about. It's actual sports.
Right.
And people will get invested in that.
What are your thoughts on defensive 3 seconds?
I don't know if I'm one way or the other yet.
Because I hate, to me, the call that refs get wrong most often is the block charge.
Like, oh, just, absolutely.
And I would just love to get rid of the charge, but I know you can't do that. Like, to me, there's a difference between an offensive foul and a charge. I'd like to get rid of the charge. I have to keep the offensive foul. But defensive 3 seconds at least opens up the paint, so
yeah,
you either have like a clear view and there's not going to be, you know, guys sliding over, and you know, the ref sees him fall, or it's like a guard taking a, you know, standing there in front of a big and he falls, and you know, oh well, that's obviously going to be an offensive foul every time. That's the only option I can think of right now of eliminating that block charge call.
I think that's a good way to get to the elimination of the block charge. I think that because of some the hand check fouls that they've really ramped up, and like if you try to go to the basket, you're going to get to the foul line. If you're now opening up the lane even more, there are going to be more dudes just putting their head down and going to the rim. And I've noticed that in the last 2 years. You're just getting – it's brutal. Like, I would love more physicality, but and opening up the lane is good for more transition play and more points. But I just feel like it then is open to potentially more fouls, less controversial ones, because the block charge is by far the most controversial foul, as well as the most annoying, overcalled, unnecessarily called one. But I just think fouls need to change in general. There's way too many of them. I don't think they're fouling more.
I couldn't agree with you more. Like, it's just
like, I'm not saying it needs to be the ease, but like, let them play a bit.
Right. Like, I just hate when, you know, you look up, like, there's a good flow to kind of start the game, and it's a big game, and you're locked in, and 11 minutes to go, there's a whistle, and you look, and it's like, okay, well, they're shooting free throws for the next 11 minutes.
Yeah, and
it's not fun. Like, think about the national title game. How many people were turned off by that?
Fouls. Yeah. As a avid Georgetown fan, I always go back to the Final Four in 2007, which was Greg Oden versus Roy Hibbert, and both guys had two fouls.
Oh yeah,
minute mark, and it was like, well, okay, this was just hyped as the number one overall draft pick versus the first team All-American, and both of them sat on the bench.
Right.
And it's college basketball more than any other sport is impacted by fouls more than any of them, because you only get five, and so if you get two in the first half, see ya, go to the bench.
Right.
And so we're now ramping up the number of foul calls. I don't like, hey, give them six fouls maybe. You know,
yeah, I'm all for that just because, as a fan, you know what? Like, I'm friends with a lot of walk-ons and everything like that. I'm sorry. Nobody's sitting down to watch the eighth men battle it out.
No. And I just like a good flow to a game where you're trading buckets, where you can get a good 9-0 run, block, slam dunk, other team calls timeout, place goes nuts, and you ruin the flow of a game by just blowing the whistle. And that's not to say that the refs are doing a bad job. I just think that the regulation system is flawed.
Right. Like, the most fun game last year to me was that UNC-Kentucky game in Vegas, where the refs kind of swallowed the whistle. They just let him play up and down. You know, it was in the 90s or something like that. And there's just a flow. Like, the guy, you know, they're inbounding and just going. And, you know, they weren't calling the hand check, which is cool with me. Like, you don't have to call it every time. If it gets out of control, you call it as a warning and then let them adjust. But I agree, man. Like, I'm so over watching free throw contests. And as, like, you know, as a diehard college basketball fan, it sucks when, like, people are tuned in and they're just like, well, this game sucks.
It's really hard to convince people to watch like the last 2 minutes of a big game because it turns into 15 minutes of fouls. And it's just like, this is not indicative of the two teams that are playing. This isn't indicative of the product. Let them play, man. Like, even coaches, like, you don't always need to call a timeout. Sometimes let them play. You know, just it's college sports and inherently flawed. We're asking 18 to 20-year-old kids to do the same thing for 40 minutes, which is impossible. I couldn't do the same thing in college for 15 minutes. So, it's going to be flawed, and I think because the money and the exposure and everything, people want the perfect system. Let it be flawed. These dudes are missing shots all the time. They're taking threes that they don't know how to. You know, let them play. Let's not get hung up in the fouls all the time because it screws up the end results, especially like in a fouls changing.
What else in college basketball would you change, if anything?
If I had to change anything about college basketball.
It could be, and I'm not, we'll avoid, pay for play or anything like that, but, you know, you can, anything in the sense of the game, would you switch anything? Would you change anything? I guess, what would be your ideal NCAA basketball game?
Oh, my gosh. What's the thing I think needs the biggest overhaul? I don't know if I have an answer to this. That if I'm trying to create the perfect basketball game,
I mean, I think it might just be the fouls, honestly. I think what we talked about is what it is.
Cleaning it, like, honestly, you clean up the fouls.
But you mentioned going to six fouls. Is there anything else like that? Like, another thing I kind of like to see, and it's been talked about more and more, is offensive rebounds. The clock just resets to like 15 seconds. Just gets more possessions.
I don't know if this would alter a game ginormously, but like, I'm not a huge fan of alternating possession.
Yeah.
I'm not. Let them tip.
I get that a lot, and like, I'm fine either way with it. It's like, it's kind of how you feel with halves, where it's just like, well, if it happens, it happens. If not, it doesn't, because it's like, there's going to be a disadvantage no matter which way you do it.
I think and maybe just because I watch more college hoops than pro ball, but like, I feel like there are more tie-ups at the end of game in college because it's just sloppier than in the pros. So then you can really start to maximize the alternating possession where it's just like, let them toss up. Yeah. Some teams are taller than others. You know, you don't want to toss up against, you know, like Kentucky or Central Florida or something like that. Right.
The old UConn teams or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're – hey, I'm a huge fan, and I may be the only person in the country, but like, half court shots are worth four. You can only get one on a possession because you can't take it back.
Right.
I think that would spice, like, add a little bit of the jock jams to it, like spice it up a bit.
Yeah, I obviously that would be extreme, but I'd be down to watch that because there'd be an analytical coach that's like, listen, we need to start practicing half court shots.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, if you got a good look under 2 minutes and we're down eight, you know, wait until they set up under, you know, on the baseline in the wings, start, let it fly.
Yeah, I'm completely cool with that. All right, so going from there, obviously we got to talk about UCLA and everything that's going on. It's been talked about ad nauseum for the last week and even more so today with the players reading. It was obviously written out for him and everything like that, but, you know, I thought it was, fine. I thought it was genuine. Like, I think they kind of realized they fucked up. What's your take on the situation? Because I got a lot of people yelling at me about these three players should be expelled and they should pretty much never play college basketball, and how they embarrassed the country on top of themselves and the university. I obviously am way on the other side of that. What's your take on just this whole situation?
It's a headache nightmare that had gasoline thrown on it because of one of the players involved. Yep. Worst case scenario for UCLA, by far. But whatever the result of the game was, you two torn ACLs. I would have taken that. I would have taken a 30-point loss to Josh Pastner.
Yeah.
And two ACLs over this because it's uncontrollable and it is nothing related to basketball.
And it's going to be talked about all year.
Forever.
Yep.
Now, if you were ever to shoplift, the one place I would avoid shoplifting at all costs is another country.
Right.
I'm certainly not pro shoplift, but like
if you're gonna do it your like hometown.
Yeah, in a place like I think that then goes to a bigger philosophical question that I don't know if this is the right platform, but like Americans taking advantage of like what we have, which is you know awesome. Rest of the world in America,
right.
And I think a lot of and unfortunately. Is great as it is here, like you would think that we would all be self-aware of the fact of how great it is that we have it. You send some kids who are living the life, like those kids, you're playing Division I college basketball. I would kill to do that. That's all I ever wanted.
In fairness, though, it is three freshmen, so in fairness, yes. It is their first go around.
Yeah. Even still, like
they're dumb. Like the only way you put it is, like, it's a dumb thing to do.
If this were Miami and they did it, if they were at UCLA playing some tournament, you know, or Universal Studios and they shoplift, I'd be like, this dumb. We would still raise some of the same questions because of the ball. But because I'm no foreign policy advisor, but like I've listened to enough news over my 30-year existence on the planet to know that like China doesn't mess around. Like,
no,
don't.
There's one other country that I wouldn't want to shoplift before China, and that's North Korea.
Yeah.
Like if you're listening places Venice, where you Colombia. Don't want to shoplift, China's top three.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If we're like power – I feel like Colombia, like maybe you don't get arrested, but you don't have an arm. Like they chop off your arm.
Yeah, I just think Colombia's more like free-for-all. Like if you get it, you win.
Yeah, but like if someone figures out, you're screwed.
Yeah,
like,
you better get the hell
like
out.
Like maiming. Right. Africa is I wouldn't even know where to begin. North Korea is a number one, obviously.
For sure.
I mean they're That's number one overall seed.
On the spot.
Yeah, China's got to be top four seed or right. Not one of the top number ones.
Right.
Has
oh,
to
yeah.
be.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess like, I don't know. Should we expect 18-year-olds to know that, but like, man, just don't like. Hey, yo, Georgetown went over there and got into a fist fight with a pro team, and that's just like, and they're like, dude, we were just defending ourselves. Like, no one was shaking a finger at them. Like,
right.
And they got chairs thrown at them. So
yep.
it's,
yep.
I'm really trying to avoid the ball aspect of this because that just.
It's so hard to avoid because it's. It's the second main aspect to it. The shoplifting is obviously number one. The second one is it's the fact that one of the three players is the most famous player on the roster.
Yeah, and he drives a Lamborghini. So then that brings up, like, why is he even shoplifting? And then people have to, like, well, if the schools pay the players more, it's like, no, it's not.
No, it's
kids being dumb, which is cool, which happens, which we've all done, but, like, You're on the other side of the planet
right.
in a place that like I could still be communist. I don't know.
Yeah, and like that, if you like back home to correlate, like if they did in California, it is like federal grand larceny or whatever. But it's a misdemeanor essentially. Like based on what I was reading, so you pay a fine.
Yeah, you take it on the chin when you play USC. They make fun of you.
Yeah. So to me, I think it's just like if you're offered. What is your punishment for these kids besides just, like, numerous running up and down those steps?
Oh, gosh.
Because that's the question now, as, like,
basketball. Yeah, what do you do?
Like, what do you do? Like, you know, there's not a whole lot of precedent set in terms of this.
International incidences,
right.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, people were sending me UCLA football under Neuheisel had Paul Richardson, Shaq Richardson, and someone else. You know, they got in trouble for shoplifting, essentially it was, and they got expelled, or like they weren't allowed to enroll in the school for the quarter, and they all ended up going elsewhere.
So UCLA is as an institution also poses an impact on this, because they don't mess around. That is a well-respected, critically acclaimed university, one of the best colleges in the country. You don't get a lot of chances there. You know, it's not Mississippi State or something.
For sure, for sure.
I think it's a multiple game suspension. Luckily, here's the thing. I think it also changes if it's Jalen Hance, if it's Aaron Holiday.
Chris Wells.
Yeah, luckily these are dudes like LiAngelo. Is it LaMelo or LiAngelo?
LiAngelo.
Like, he's not – he's a reserve. He's a deep reserve. He's a decent – he's good. Like,
all these guys are in the rotation. One's probably their starting four.
Yeah, like – it's multiple game suspension. If you want to stretch it, go for all non-conference. I don't think a season-long suspension. Now, again, like, but if you're coming from an academic institution standpoint, like, it could. Probably punish them five. The whole school.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
this is not a. This isn't even a Michael Carter Williams shoplifting from Lord and Taylor, which was funny because it was slippers in a robe. This is like international incident where the president of the United States is now talking about it.
You got
to hammer it home. And also, it's a goodwill ambassador trip. They were there for a week. They did all these programs. It's got to be five plus.
Yeah, I said somewhere between 5 to 10. Like, suspend them until the Kentucky game, which is the 12th game of the season.
Yeah. I have no problem with that.
Or suspend him through the semester.
The punishment for Alford is he gets another one of these ball kids next year, and it's only going to be worse.
I know. The punishment for Alford is the fact, like, this is just over his head now, and he's like, what do you want me to do? Because if UCLA ends up being bad or average this year, it's going to be, well, Alford can't even control his kids.
Yep.
And it's a dumb storyline, and it's false, and it's... it's just going to be the worst thing to happen. Like, I hope UCLA is good strictly to avoid that.
Yeah, and they, like, if you watch the game, man, that game was fun. The Georgia Tech game was fun. It was fun as hell. Yeah. Like Lammers for Georgia Tech is awesome. 7-foot dude. Ben Lammers, awesome.
It was Ben Lammers versus Thomas Welsh for the first, like, 12 minutes of the game.
Yeah, but, like, Jalen Hands, Wilkes, and Holiday were just, like, they're going to be fun to watch.
Super fun to watch.
That game versus Arizona, they're going to hit up and down, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But that's the thing, is it's not just visual results for UCLA. It's like there has to be success, because Steve Alford's been on the hot seat since he's been there.
Yeah.
Fair or not, it's what happens when you take a UCLA. It's what happens when you take an Indiana.
And your name's Steve Alford.
Yeah, yeah. And, it's recruiting is easier when you're there. You get nicer facilities. You can get the better players, but – that having the best roster doesn't mean that you're going to be good. And getting to that part where you're actually good is impossible. People think being great is easy and should happen all the time, when they forget how hard it is to be consistently good. And this is not just college basketball, but football as well. Teams will want to be great on a year-to-year basis. And it's like, you know how hard it is to be good year in and year out? There are only four or five NFL teams that are like that. And those are the elite of the elite. Like, you know, be fine with 8-8. Or be fine with, you know, making the tournament 6 years. It should all be about Final Fours. But when you've won seven in a row at UCLA and Wooden, and I could just name everyone who's ever gone there, like, this is – Steve Alford has a taller task than he had through no – I don't know how you can police this beforehand. Maybe having another meeting beforehand, reminding kids. But after a while, you should think, like, do I have to tell them to not shoplift?
I feel like
kind of self-explanatory when we're going to China.
Right.
It's like, hey, guys, reminder, just in case you need it, don't steal anything.
I hope that UCLA goes back to China within 2 years.
Dude, UCLA should play Georgetown in China.
I mean, that would be great. Like, what team would China root against more?
They'd have to play in a cage match, and I'd be all in.
That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
Play it, like, not on, like, one of the big coastal cities, but, like, 300 miles inland. You are as far away from any border as possible.
Just bunch of, like, cigarette smoke in the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dude, like the kickboxer. I'd be all in for that.
Fit, like, 400 people in the gym and just call it a day.
And that's the thing is, 400 people may not go to that game because those two schools.
No, 400 people will go, and there'll be 400 people ready to fight.
I'm all in. Hey, there is no preseason, there's no early season test in college basketball that can stack up to playing the Pyongyang Dragons and having fans throw chairs at you. Like, I don't care if Georgetown made the tournament that year. Like, yeah, the Texas Southern doesn't play a schedule that hard where dudes are fighting you and like fans are fighting you.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go real quick back to last night with the Champions Classic. What was your take on the Kentucky-Kansas going forward? Because I mean, it was obviously an ugly game. Both teams not at full strength. Am I weird for thinking this? And I don't. Or is it a hot take? I feel better about Kentucky going forward than Kansas, despite the loss.
Not a bad take. I feel better about Kentucky after watching that game than before the game.
Yeah. Oh, I thought 100%.
Yeah. I think I'm also just like a Kansas stan. Like I don't think I through just watching them all the time. I like, it's hard to not like them.
Right.
Year out, they're always pretty damn good. You win 13 straight conference titles.
Their average seed in the NCAA tournament for the last decade is 1.5.
Yeah. So people criticize them because they've been to like 1.5 Final Fours in that same time period. The Gerald Vick is awesome. Like he's going to have a huge year. Yeah. You know, it's interesting to see what Bill Self does with Billy Preston. Bill Self has not had the greatest track record with freshman players, really balling out. It took Wiggins a long time. Cliff Alexander never played. Embiid was on the bench and injured and didn't get enough minutes. The list goes on. Kentucky, I thought, super talented, super young. Like, Hamidou Diallo is their veteran because he enrolled early.
Right,
They can play. Wenyen Gabriel. They can play. They can really play. They're a ways away, but typically the Kentucky teams are. The thing, I think the biggest takeaway is you look at a lot of the dudes and you're like, well, here's the good news. No one and duns. But these guys are going to be phenomenal sophomores, phenomenal juniors if they decide to stay. But that means next year is going to be loaded. But, like, don't write off this year.
Right. Like, I think
20 games, they're going to be – they'll still be the best team in the SEC by far, I think.
Yeah,
Florida's really good, though. Florida's
good. A&M's good. Missouri could be good. Yes. Alabama could be good. I still think this is like a Sweet 16 team, and if you get there, all you have to do is win two, and you're in the Final Four.
So going forward, you like Kentucky over Kansas. Why is that?
I'm trusting the development of Shai Gilgeous, Alexander, and Kwadi Green, the 2-point guards, just because Calipari guards get better as the season goes on. And to me, that was like the one difference last night is like Gilgeous, Alexander, you couldn't play offensively. Green, you couldn't play defensively. I just think that at some point, one of those two becomes like the complete player.
Yeah.
I don't know which one, but one of them does.
When you re-roster every year, You start with freshmen. They're always going to get better, and this is a veteran-laden team. The Kansas you see now is more than likely to be the same Kansas in February.
That's kind of my thought process. I know they get Sam Cunkliffe in January, but how much better is this Kansas team going to get? Like, you know, what's their ceiling from – obviously they didn't shoot the ball well last night, but what's their ceiling from last night to February?
It's a bit higher, but like they beat Kentucky and we know Kentucky is going to like, I think if they play in February, it's a 5-point game. I don't know who wins, but I think it's a 5-point game.
Right.
But it's just that, they're starting further. Like they have like
the
dudes with a less
Kentucky
higher. Yeah.
It's just so much lower, obviously, than Kansas.
The ceiling's higher.
The ceiling's higher. Exactly.
So that thing is, Kentucky is, we always know, like, after the Champions Classic, this team isn't going to be the same team that we saw in November, when it's February. We've known that every year they've played the Champions Classic, but I think this year it's even more different just because they're so young, and not to say this is the worst recruiting class, but this doesn't stack up to past recruiting classes.
No, I think it is safe to say this. Well, it's probably the second worst recruiting class behind the Nerlens Noel year, but it's not a great recruiting class. Like it'll end up being great because I think you lose three guys this year. Everyone else comes back, and next year's team is loaded to where, you know, now you're talking national title contender again. But this year, another thing is, I think somebody eventually ends up being a shooter from Kentucky. Like, someone else is going to step up with Kevin Knox to at least stretch the floor. Again, I don't know who it is, but someone's going to step up at some point.
That's been the big issue for those teams, for all the teams the last couple of years. Like, they've had one true shooter, maybe, like a James Young type.
Yeah.
Like, didn't do a lot else. Like, they need one of their best players to be a great shooter.
Yeah, I think,
and ultimately, one of the Harrison twins did that. No.
But I think they'll have someone else that becomes a respectable shooter. Like, Kevin Knox is a respectable shooter. I think someone else will end up being a respectable shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And it's just a weird take, because obviously they lost, and, you know, they haven't looked good through three games. But, yeah, I agree with what you said, though, that I feel a lot better about them after watching them last night than I did after watching the first two games. And I don't think it's close. Like, defensively, they were a lot better last night.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I don't know what it is. These freshmen, they seemed like they played harder than a little bit of the other freshman classes. I don't know if it's because they realized maybe they're not as highly touted on the recruiting ranks. I don't know, but it seems like a group that might gel better than the other ones.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, because it's more like, hey, we have to do this together. Not that the other teams didn't do it together, because I always thought that Kentucky didn't get credit for being unselfish, but it's more like, hey, if we don't play really well as a team, like, we don't have one guy that's just going to go bail us out.
Yeah, they were self-reliant. They aren't going to be as self-reliant on seeding the, like, hey, Karl Anthony Towns, we kind of dug ourselves a hole. Can you pull us out of this?
Yeah.
Certainly, in any team on any night in college basketball, one dude can go off. But they don't have a dude who you're like, back to Grayson Allen from the beginning of this. Is like, there's not some dude who's like, all right, guys, on the back you go, 14 points, let's get it done. So it's going to have to be team first. And like you said, I don't think Calipari's gotten enough credit over the years. What he does is impossible, and he really tries to break them down as much as possible and say, like, we will not win unless five of you on the court win all together.
Yeah.
And so I think this crew has that possibility, because they're super talented. They're just, like, it's hard for me to even say it's the worst class or the second worst class, because whatever that worst class is, isn't worst. It's just the least awesome, because all of their recruiting classes are awesome.
Yeah, and that's fair. All right, I'm going to go to, like, a little rapid-fire questions with you. Just completely – it wouldn't be a podcast with me and you if it didn't get a little off the rails. So there's going to be a bunch of random stuff that I was thinking about since we decided to do this earlier today.
Let's do it.
What is the best game – for the best jersey combination?
Oh, my God.
Because this stemmed from something I saw on Twitter today, where it was the Rangers and Blackhawks playing. It was like, well, this is the best hockey jersey game.
So is this just college hoops or anything?
Just college hoops. We'll go everything. Go college hoops and then anything.
Oh, man. And they have to be current jerseys?
Current jerseys, yeah.
Oh,
or at
no.
At least, like, in the rotation, like, you know, like, Notre Dame's green is in the rotation or whatever.
Oh, gosh. I love the Notre Dame. This is not going to be rapid fire, because, man, I'm stumped.
No, but, yeah, more off-the-rail questions.
It's got to be a team that's got black unis. And, dude, I love Hawaii's uniforms.
Yeah.
Green, black, and white is an impossible combo to screw up. So give me Hawaii, and then give me Missouri's gold uniforms, where they wear white socks and white shoes.
I like that. I like that. What was that?
It's random as hell, but why the hell not?
So if I'm going traditional, it's got to be the UCLA blues versus North Carolina whites.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. Those two combos, you don't want white versus light blue. You get dudes throwing the wrong passes.
Sure,
like that.
Sure.
Games. It's not
one that
not a bad
one. One that I would really like, though, is Notre Dame's cursive greens versus the Wake Forest grays that they wore last year. That was a throwback to, like, the Randolph Childress Duncan era. It's a nice gray color with the green. And then you got both got, like, yellow or gold involved. And then you have like the navy and the black. Give me that one. Might be my answer.
I like the UCLA whites, Kevin Love era, where the C was
gold. That was, yeah. Those
and,
were nice.
Oh, give me those versus the Allen Iverson blue Georgetown uniforms with the gray kente cloth, which I think is the single greatest uniform in all of sports.
That's your favorite uniform?
Yes. Now, okay. if we're going any team, any game, Shaq era black pinstripe Magic jersey versus the Peyton Kemp Sonics green and whites.
Okay. If I'm trying to think, like, NBA would probably be mine. You know what I kind of liked were the blue Knicks with the black piping?
Yeah, the Anthony Mason era.
Yep. The blue Knicks with the black piping versus the I'm trying to think, like, what would I'm somewhat thinking, like, the Lakers yellow with the blue and the yellow, but I don't know if I like that when the Lakers the best or versus someone else. Like,
I love the Lakers, like, Sunday whites.
Sunday whites.
Yeah. Oh, those are so nice.
Those are clean. Those are really clean. I'm trying to think, like, some I think it might be that.
That's a tough question.
We create league pass for college basketball. Who are the five teams you're signing up for? You get free five teams to just come on your TV whenever they play.
Give me Montana State just for
Tyler Hall.
Give me Vermont. For Tribble, that team is going to be good. I'm trying also just to stay away from the power conference teams because they're on TV.
Right.
But like I think
not the Pac-12.
yeah. I think Florida's going to be awesome. I want to watch as much Florida as possible because still trying to figure out Michael White as a head coach. Like I think he's good, but
I think he's really good.
I need to see more of them.
Hey, everyone has to have the Warriors on their league pass team, so you're allowed to have good teams.
Trying to think. There's a sneaky one in here. St. John's, they could score.
Yeah. They don't play defense either.
No, they don't play defense. And give me Missouri. It's like Missouri heavy for me, but
you
like
want the Porter.
Michael Porter. You get SEC games, so you'll get a Kentucky game in there.
Lonzo Martin figured it out.
Yeah, and I think here's the thing. In the last 3 years when they've been terrible, the arena has been empty, but that arena can get super loud. Like, for their first game, it was packed.
Yeah, like the front, when did they Phil Presley, that arena was sick.
Yeah. When they had Kim English and Lawrence Bowers, like, that place was live. So, yeah, Montana State, Florida, Missouri, St. John's, and then there was another team I said. I can't remember.
Vermont,
yeah.
I like that. I like those teams. I think I'm going to go South Dakota State for your same answer. Like, I want to watch Mike Dom.
Yes.
Grand Canyon, because they're my
yes.
team.
Yes. Oh,
that's so
a good
in
one.
On Grand Canyon. Shout out Havix and Lopes Up. I'm big on Lopes Rising. I think I'm going to go. So those two are my two mid majors. I think I'm going to go Villanova just because I love watching Villanova run offense. I'm trying to do the same of avoiding. I'll tell you what, Oakland is going to be on my team because Kendrick Nunn might score 100 in a game. I'll go USC for my other
big one. That's a good one.
Yeah, and you're not getting Pac-12 games on a lot of channels.
Yeah, dude, I just noticed that. I was looking for a game and I couldn't find it. And I was
it sucks. Like
I want to resubmit because you just gave me some ideas. So I'm taking two of yours.
Okay.
Oakland and Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon is live as hell, dude. Yeah. I don't know how they did it, but that arena is crazy. So give me Oakland, Grand Canyon, Davidson. They score 120 points a game. VCU. One of the best environments in the country. They could have a new coach every year, and I'd still want to watch them play. And then give me Duke.
Okay. Yeah. No, I like that. I like that five better than your first five.
Yeah. I just needed some names tossed out there. A little brainstorm.
Yep. So you obviously did. You and Rob went around the country, saw a bunch of different places. What is your favorite arena to watch a game in?
Oof, man. So like the marquee stops were Kentucky, Kansas, Indiana, Butler.
When were you at Rupp? What was the year and game?
It was the first SEC game of the season in the 2011-2012 season. So it was Anthony Davis's first home.
Yeah.
First SEC home game. They played South Carolina. That was just terrible. The Cincinnati Bengals also, it was a Saturday afternoon game, and the Cincinnati Bengals were playing a wild card game. Okay. So that region, you know,
I live in Cincinnati, yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. So like the Bengals were a big deal. The place was packed. There was like a gun convention before the game, so it was crazy as hell. Like dudes were walking around.
Sounds
downtown.
Like a standard Saturday in Lexington.
Yeah. And while the game was quiet also because they won by 4. The reason I wouldn't put Rupp there is quiet. Also playing.
No, I think Rupp and for those who listen, you probably know, like, I'm a Kentucky graduate. I think Rupp is the most overrated arena in basketball.
If I go to Rupp again, it needs to be for a UNC game. Like, transport me back to the Anthony Davis John Henson game.
Yeah.
That was loud as hell. But if
that was
I'm
a ton of fun.
Based off of just the games I've gone to, dude. Lawrence, Kansas, Fog Allen is like you get the feeling when you walk in, like from the movie when like the golden lights come on from heaven and like the angels sing, like it's legit. Like I it's weird, dude.
But I think that's number one on my bucket list.
It gets loud quickly. It's not, it's big, but it feels intimate as hell.
Okay.
That's probably number one. Assembly Hall, Indiana was awesome. And where they put the media, they put you like 10 rows back in the student section with students around you. You can't hear anything. And it's loud as hell. And that place is deceivingly deep and big. So that's probably number two for me. It's a really, really traditional Fog Allen and then Assembly Hall. Cameron Indoor, which wasn't on the road trip, but I've been to a bunch. I went to Duke, North Carolina last year.
I mean, I can't even imagine that.
It was awesome. So those, you know, the ones you think would be at the top of the list are at the top of the list. The one that honestly I don't think it gets enough credit is whatever where Maryland plays. Now it's the Xfinity Center.
Yeah, man. I did a top 10, like just home court advantages of, you know, obviously like completely subjective. And I had Maryland, like I started listening. I was like, wait a minute, I have Maryland way too low.
Dude, because so the way they built the sides behind the baskets, they went real steep. So like it's a wall of students. Yeah. And so I've been there for a couple games. I saw them play Duke the last time in conference before the split. It was loud as hell. It was you couldn't hear yourself.
My first ever college basketball game in person that I remember was at Cole Fieldhouse. So
yeah,
I grew up hating Maryland because I grew up a Wake Forest fan. And like my cousin's a Maryland fan. I just always cheered against them. But like I have a soft spot in my heart for Maryland home courts.
Yeah. Like, I grew up hating Maryland, still hate Maryland. I live in Maryland, hate Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
But the arena, the Cole Fieldhouse was
and, like, Xfinity Center, whatever it is now, Comcast Center.
It's a good venue. It's a real hostile place to play.
And I'll give the fans credit. Like, they are super creative. They're very entertaining. Like, they get after it. Like, that's all I want. Like, that's to me, like Rupp gets loud because there's just so many people.
Yeah.
Give me the entertainment. Like, give me the flash dances that they all did and the chants that they all do.
Yeah, Kentucky gets quiet. There.
It's super quiet because it's an old crowd there.
Yeah. What do they call them? The blue ticks or whatever.
The
blue heads, yeah.
Yeah, the blue heads. What was your – what arena were you most surprised by? And it could be good or bad.
Yo, the Cintas Center where Xavier plays is nice.
Silly. And they just got all renovated too.
Oh, it's so nice.
I can't wait. I'm going – you'll like this. So I have – it's a local trip. I'm going to, in February, Villanova at Xavier on Saturday, Wichita State at Cincinnati on Sunday.
Oh.
I'm pretty good about it.
That's a nice
– yeah.
And the Fifth Third's Arena or wherever they played Cincinnati. Like, I actually like the campus of Cincinnati. I thought it was cool. We spent some time there.
Yeah, it's a lot different now than when you guys were here. Like, they've done a good job of, like, cleaning up the like areas around down there and added a bunch of new stuff.
It's but the Synthos, like Xavier campus is a bit like doesn't really do anything, but the arena's super nice.
Yeah.
And it's like intimate and loud, but like looks like
and you can it could be in there.
Yes, which is huge.
That's the best thing about sporting events. Like I Kentucky, like Rupp Arena, like where, when I was going to games, like you couldn't drink there. And then I remember like starting going to games in other places and being like, wait a minute, I can just go get a drink and watch it and sit in my seat.
Yeah, like
yeah, that's normal.
With a team that never played on campus at Georgetown, like certainly I wasn't drinking as a 10-year-old, but when I started to that age, there was no like, how am I going to do this now? It was just like, oh, 21, get a beer.
What is on the what's number one on the bucket list for places you haven't been, arena wise?
I think it has to be the Carrier Dome.
I'm surprised you haven't been there. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it would ever meet the expectations of which I have for it, and I don't know if there will be a game there again that I would go to that would have them now. And it all changes on a year-to-year basis. Yeah. But like even a Georgetown Syracuse game from here forward just won't have the magnitude that a late January game would 10, 15 years ago. The Pit out in New Mexico is one I want to go to, just because of the stories you hear from them. And like the kennel out McHale and Rick and Zaga. I think it's probably Pitt, Kennel, and the Carrier Dome.
I like that. I think I would go Hinkie, which I'm supposed to go see a game there.
It's cool. It's real cool. Hinkle.
Yeah. I'm biased, but I kind of want to go see a game at Grand Canyon.
I do too. You know, my parents just moved out there, and I still haven't been to a game. I'm going to try to go to one around Christmas because I was like, Thunder Dan's got something there. I don't know how. It's like a for-profit college, but they can play too.
Yeah, they're really good. Like, they're really good. And I've been inside of Cameron, but I've never seen a game there.
Yeah, that's – if I had to – if someone asked me, I can only go to one college basketball game, where do I go? And you get to pick the game. It's Duke, North Carolina, Cameron. It's 6,000 people that you – if you cover the game, you leave covered in paint because you are literally in the middle of the student section. It is as cool as Rupp is, as cool as Hinkle is, as cool as Fog is, as cool as all of those are. If I had to choose one game to go to – it's Duke, North Carolina at Cameron Indoor. And perhaps I'm biased because I grew up, on the East Coast and Duke is everything. Even grew up a Georgetown fan. Like, it's Duke, North Carolina at Cameron. That place is – there ain't nothing like it.
What's the one game that you haven't seen that you'd want to see the most?
A Big Five game at the Palestra that means something.
I was supposed to play at the Palestra, and it got moved, and I don't think I've ever been more upset in my life.
Oh, like an unbeaten – A-10 St. Joe's team that's around top 25 versus a top 10 Villanova non-conference mid at the Palestra, cold. I can get real down with that.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Obviously, mine would be Duke Carolina at Cameron, but I like that answer a lot. The other one I would throw out is maybe like a UCLA Arizona in Arizona.
It's hard, like, growing up on the East Coast. Like, I've watched UCLA a ton. I watch Arizona, but there's never that connection. I didn't know a lot of people who went there. I don't hear a lot of stories about it. So, like, even though I'm from D.C., like, 6 hours from Cameron.
Right.
I've driven past it. I've played lacrosse there. I've played basketball there. Like, it's hard for me to get more emotionally connected. So, like, I forgot that UCLA Arizona is a thing. But, like, the game was last year or 2 years ago. Like, Russell Westbrook was there. Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, the atmosphere was incredible.
So, like, I had an undying love for Jason Gardner growing up.
Why not?
Like, I was all in on, like, Arizona games back then. I remember watching them being like, I could get down with this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was – for, like, a kid like myself who, like, watched all the basketball. Like, Arizona is an easy team to root for because you don't know why you shouldn't not root for them, especially when Jason Terry, Gilbert Arenas, Gardner – Mustafa Shakur, Lauren Woods, Channing Frye, like they,
Mike easy Bibby, Dickerson, like they were silly. So I put this out right before we got on. Pitt is really bad this year.
Yo, they're terrible.
So here's my question, and I'm 100% serious with this question, and it is, what conference would Pitt finish the best in, and where in the standings would they finish?
Oh,
I would say the NEC.
Right, like there's been just three answers.
I think if you put them in the Patriot League, they win, but they got a couple losses.
I don't know. Like, are they better than Bucknell?
I think they are. I think they're a better team than Bucknell. The thing is, I think Bucknell could beat them because they don't play well. They don't have a good coach. I thought you were going to ask me if Kevin Stallings makes it through the year, and I literally asked that at work today to a college basketball fan in the office because I don't know if he does.
I mean, he shouldn't. Like, it's not like they had like a great recruiting class coming in where you have to save him.
Like the Big South is typically awful, and or the ACC. For ASUN purposes. South team.
I think it's like the MEAC, the NEC, and like the SWAC. Those are really the only three conferences I'm comfortable saying.
Is the Great West still a thing?
There's the Big West.
No.
There's
no,
no
the Great,
Great
West. It was like for 4 years. It's like where NJIT played, where Chicago State played.
Oh, yeah. No. Because NJIT is in the ASUN now.
Yeah.
And Chicago State is in. Chicago State might be in the WAC now.
NEC. Let's go NEC.
All right. I like that. Anything else random you got? That's all I have.
Oh. Okay. So this might take a long time, but I just want your top of the head answer. We've been debating this a bunch. I'll give you the final evolution of this question. Initial was every college basketball program is looking for a head coach. Every team has sent you an offer for the same amount of money. All very good. What are the five top options? But then we all kind of had the same five options. So here's the question. Same amount of money from both schools. Kentucky and North Carolina have offered you the job. What is the better job?
Oh, I'm biased, but it's got to be Kentucky. Like, you are the – to me, it's the better job because you are the clear-cut best program in your state region. Like, is North Carolina better than Duke? I don't know. Like, that's a back and forth. Kentucky's always usually better than Louisville. It's the better program to go to.
Yeah.
I think it's a no-brainer. Like, and then you get – like, if you get into, like, the academics and all this stuff, it's easier to get into Kentucky than it is North Carolina. Recruiting base is pretty similar, but also a little irrelevant because both just recruit all over the country. But I mean, you know, Kentucky, you're within hours to Chicago and Indianapolis.
And you could play a game in Hawaii and you'd get 10,000 Wildcats.
Yeah. Kentucky probably travels a little bit better than North Carolina, but it's
I think North Carolina travels. I think Kentucky are the Pittsburgh Steelers of college basketball.
Yeah. Like when I went up to Brooklyn 2 years ago for the CBS Sports Classic, and it was definitely more Kentucky fans than Carolina.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say no-brainer because, like, I find myself wanting to say North Carolina, but then ultimately being like, come on, it's Kentucky. Again, I just said that I went to a Kentucky game against a crap South Carolina team when the Bengals were playing, and that region, the Bengals are the pro sports team. Kentucky's the pro sports team. The biggest thing in that region.
Yeah, and like Carolina, but like, are they bigger than Duke? Like, it's close to me.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. I think it has to be Kentucky, but at the same time, you know, it's got that Indiana to it, where like eight straight Elite Eights don't cut it.
Yeah. So if I'm a coach, here are my top five just coaching destinations, like where I would like look at. I'd have Kentucky one. I would have – I might have Texas two.
It's
easily my top five. I'll say that.
It's very hard to not include them.
Yeah, Texas would easily be in my top five. I'd say Indiana's somewhere in the top five because everything there. So those three, I don't know. Is Carolina the better one over Duke? I think Carolina might get in there, you know, in the top five. And oh man, Arizona maybe for the last one.
I can't fathom how UCLA has not won eight straight national championships in both basketball and football. Like,
yeah, or USC.
UCLA to me should be the best in everything because they have the flexibility to go get the athletes. They're an academic institution in the best place on earth with their competition brand. They are national brands. For me, UCLA is in there. It has to be, regardless of how good they've been.
So it's funny you say that because I always say, here are the programs that should, for college basketball, that should be relevant every year, and they aren't relevant every year. And it's USC, Texas, Illinois, St. John's, Georgetown. Like, those five should be relevant every year.
Every single year. I think when you get into these small Catholic schools, the footprint is smaller. It's further away from a lot of recruiting bases. But New York City, the fact that there is no New York City basketball team is obscene. Illinois, Chicago,
all have recent history in terms of NBA players, in terms of success. Like, wasn't long ago Illinois was in a national title game that they probably should have won. It also wasn't.
I do think there is something to be said on the Chicago, D.C., and New York regions of people being grown up from there. It's easy, and those are big cities that are in metropolises that are, you know, you got Philadelphia, you got Boston, you got Milwaukee, whatever, where there's places to bounce to. And also, kids want to get out. A lot of those places are rough. Out too, but like to get to the next city, it's like 8 hours away as opposed to 2 hours away, 3 hours away. So it's easier and more options in basketball because there's 370 as opposed to 20. But I think that's why, you know, the homegrown dudes aren't staying as much at Georgetown, St. John's, Illinois, because they're like, I need to get out of Chicago. I need to get out of PG County. I need to get out of Brooklyn, whatever.
Yeah, but even some now, like a lot more from PG County are starting to stay home at Maryland.
Yeah.
And I know it's a little different Maryland to Georgetown, but still, like, it's still Georgetown.
Yeah, but I think Georgetown, their biggest problem is the thing they promote more than anything is history.
Yeah.
And history is old. Yeah.
But again, they have the recent history. Like,
yes, and they got pros.
Just promote like the mid, you know, the late 2000s.
Yeah, they got pros.
They'd be fine. Yeah, yeah. Or just keep.
Illinois is the head scratcher, man. Because no one in that region is dominating the recruiting scene, and that is as fertile as it gets.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and you don't have to go far. You're like, okay, if you want to get kids that bounce from, you know, their hometown, you're not far from Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And Indianapolis has been loaded with talent lately.
Oh my God! Yeah.
So, and again, you have the recent history. You have names that people remember, and Darren Williams and D. Brown. Like, you know, that wasn't that long ago. Where kids these days are like, wait a minute, I don't remember 05 or something like that. Like, no, like they know these guys. The other one for me is Washington too. Like, I'd throw Washington in the mix.
Yeah, there's Seattle.
Seattle's a good base.
Yeah, and they've had pros. Washington's got a ton of pros.
they sure do.
And the Pac-12 is a winnable conference.
Sure is. Like, there's no reason for Washington to be just super bad.
Yeah.
So it's funny, that stuff. So anything else you got?
I think that's for me, man. That's a good start to the season.
Where can everyone find you at?
Find me on Twitter at Troy Macher, MACHIR. You know, 6 p.m. to 3 a.m. Weekday nights, Saturdays, hoops all day, every day. You know, I work at NBC Sports Washington. Not a lot of college hoops here, but it never stops. So it's I'll be here all season.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining. You make sure to follow the show at Fundamental ESD. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all that good stuff. Rate, review. And Brust and I will be back Sunday with another episode, getting everyone ready for Feast Week, which is sneaky the second best week of the season.
Yes.
All right. See everyone later.